How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Only a couple of days before Christmas, we're coming off one of the busier weeks of the year and leading into one of the least busy weeks of the year. In fact, most of the big news we talked about on last weekend's show, but did have a couple of brand new WWE events after we went off the air last week, including the Slammy Awards show and the TLC pay-per-view, as well as Tribute to the Troops. We'll talk about Impact as well. Got a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of shows, and we will preview a little bit of stuff going into the new year. Obviously, the Royal Rumble is coming up, and it looks like it's going to be CM Punk versus The Rock for the WWE title. I would be shocked if anything other than that occurred, although it is looking like on January 7th, it is going to be CM Punk versus Ryback in a TLC match on Raw. The match that was scheduled to take place at the TLC pay-per-view, but could not after CM Punk underwent knee surgery. Possible they could try to do some wild, crazy swerve and put the belt on Ryback, but most likely they're going to continue forward with the Punk versus Rock plans. And where they go from there, I guess, is anyone's guess. A lot of different ideas leading into WrestleMania. A lot of different plans that have changed, unchanged, and changed again over the last several months. We're going to talk about that. Plus a full report of the Slammies. The return of Ric Flair to WWE, at least for the moment, for just one night. The Randy Orton injury at the Tribute to the Troops show. A lot of reports initially that he'd injured his wrist. Actually, he separated his shoulder, dislocated his shoulder, actually. And they actually were able to pop it back in during the match, but he's going to be out of action until the beginning of the year. We'll talk about plans for him, potentially leading into WrestleMania. Talk about the death, speaking of Ric Flair, of Ric Flair's first tag team championship partner. The first title that Ric Flair ever won in pro wrestling was the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team titles, and his partner on that team, Rib Hawk, passed away a couple of days ago. Mike will talk about that. Plus, Strikeforce is finished in January. It is official. We'll talk about Ronda Rousey and big full-page ad in the Sports Business Journal. So much more to talk about today. Coming up in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 794. Places show every week, if all else fails, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. If you download the TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone, you can search Sports Byline USA, listen to all of the great Sports Byline programming, including this show. That is the TuneIn Radio app, iPhones, Androids. Every smartphone should be able to download it as an app, so check that out if you cannot hear the show on your local affiliate or the station you normally hear this programming on. We are here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour, and when we went off the air last week, we were talking about the WWE TLC pay-per-view. We were previewing the show, and when all was said and done, Mike, a lot of stuff went pretty much exactly as we'd predicted.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, you knew they were going to do some things that would send people home happy, because when you looked at the card and you kind of thought, you know, the logic behind, you know, which guys would win, it looked to be a pretty much a heel sweep going up and down the show. So they had Kofi Kingston go out there and defeat Wade Barrett, as you had thought that they would. But for the most part, it was the right guys, you know, winning the matches. And the most important thing of the whole night was the fact that the Shield looked good in a, you know, what was a good six-man tag match. It was, you know, all the plunder that comes with a TLC match. But they held up to their end of the deal, and they got over as, you know, impressive stars, and that continued on with the rest of the week's shows, when having the Raw on Monday and then having the live SmackDown on Tuesday that was commercial-free. They did a good job with them, and that's really the most important thing that anyone can take away from this show.
Two biggest matches on the show, obviously, were the John Cena-Dolph Ziggler ladder match for the Money in the Bank briefcase, which, as most people probably predicted, AJ came down, turned on John Cena, tipped over the ladder. Ziggler had a super kick, climbed up and grabbed the briefcase. And fans were super into that spot. Interesting audience, obviously, in the market. Very anti-John Cena, very pro-Dolph Ziggler. Big babyface pop when AJ tipped over the ladder. But that's pretty much what one would have come to expect. Also, the and it was an excellent match, by the way. Excellent match. So Dolph Ziggler retains the briefcase. And then the highlight of the show, to me, was the TLC match with The Shield facing Daniel Bryan, Kane, and Ryback. And a very interesting match in the sense that we were talking going in, who should win this match? Ryback obviously was undefeated until that Hell in a Cell match with CM Punk, where he lost via pinfall as a result of Brad Maddox doing a heel referee gig in the match. And then on to Survivor Series, where they originally were going to do a 10-man elimination match where Ryback could have run through everybody and been the sole survivor. But instead, Vince McMahon saw the buy rate for Hell in a Cell and said, nope, we need this man headlining in a three-way for the title. So it was Ryback, Cena, and CM Punk for the belt, and Ryback got beaten again, two in a row. And then we moved on to this show, and the question was, do you beat Ryback three times in a row on pay-per-view, even if he doesn't drop the fall? Do you still beat him three times in a row? Or is it, do you put the Shield over? Because they shouldn't be losing in their first match either. And I think most people agreed, probably should put the Shield over. That is what they did. It was an excellent match. This was the first match, probably in years, where they took individuals, in this case being The Shield, who had never, ever wrestled before on WWE television. In fact, they'd only been on television for a few weeks, threw them into a main event caliber match, and they held up their end of the bargain. And when the match was over, they were superstars. So it wasn't a five-star match, but in a lot of ways, it was a five-star match in the sense of getting new guys over as main eventers. They came out of the match looking like stars. They won the match. And again, third loss in a row for Ryback. We'll talk about that in a moment. But overall, Mike, I thought they could not have done a better job with The Shield in that TLC match.
No, absolutely. And the way the match was laid out and booked, it was great. And then obviously, individually, all of them holding up to their end of the deal. You know, Dean Ambrose is the least photogenic of the bunch. He's got the best rap by far. When you hear him speak, his cadence, there's just something special about Dean Ambrose, even though you look at him and you go, okay, you know, compared to what you think of a WWE superstar, you know, he's not your prototypical guy. But with that said, the faces he made, you know, when he was in pain, you know, the suplex on the ladder, which they re-showed, you know, when Ryback double suplexed he and Tyler Black, it was, you know, it's things like that that then made them stand out, too, because it shows you that polish that they, you know, both of those guys have had being in wrestling now. Obviously, they haven't been in forever, but for, you know, making their bones in Ring of Honor and in Dragon Gate USA and Evolve and those sorts of things, you can see where it's been paying off for them. And again, that stuff really, you know, led them to holding up their end of the deal, besides the physical stuff as well, which, you know, Tyler Black got one hell of an entrance into WWE and looked like he was probably knocked silly a couple of times, but they did a great job. And even Roman Reigns, you know, held up to his end of the deal, the least, you know, talented worker as it stands right now of the three, you know, technically. And they've got something with him and Ryback, because obviously it's another loss for Ryback. But with that said, you know, obviously we complain about WWE not creating stars, and obviously with Orton's injury and things like that, it always shows the lack of depth that they have. But with that said, I'm not for exactly making Ryback the face or the star or anything like that of the company, and I don't want him to be just another guy. But with that said, you know, him not losing, staying strong by losing in weird ways, I think is still the best thing you can do with him, because he is so incredibly limited right now, and there's other guys you should be taking care of. So you have something with him and Reigns coming out of this, just because, you know, Reigns can always say, we've put you through a table now three times, and Ryback can fire back at him and say, yeah, but you've needed your friends to do it. And again, Ryback in the world title picture, or as the top face of the company, when you have your Zigglers and Shields and Cenas and Sheamuses and all those other guys, you know, to me it's not needed, but him remaining strong, you know, still is, and I know him always being on the losing side of these things, even getting screwed out of things, is not the best case scenario, you know, as far as, you know, making him a major superstar or anything like that, but I don't think it's going to hurt him either. Again, because he does need so much time to get better if they want to, you know, really utilize him for the long term.
Well, it is interesting because the Hell in a Cell show did a very good buy rate. And my theory, I think most people's theory, is that it was the circumstances. You were doing a cage match, a Hell in a Cell match, and it was the undefeated Ryback. He'd never lost, going against Punk for the title. Punk had not lost in nearly a year, and it's supposedly a match where you have to have a decisive winner. And match did way better than usual as a result of this perfect storm. And obviously, all of the talk going into was, well, who loses? It's not the right time. It was not the right time to beat Ryback because Ryback was not even originally going to be in that match. It was going to be John Cena and CM Punk, and then John Cena suffered an injury and they threw Ryback in there. And it wasn't the time to beat him. It wasn't the time to beat Punk. They had to make a decision. They did Brad Maddox as the heel referee. And whatever happened to the finish, that has nothing to do with the buys for that show. People bought the show going in not knowing what was going to happen. And you know, why did people buy the show? Did they want to see Ryback win? Did they want to see what would happen? Obviously, all of that played into it. So that brings us to Survivor Series. The very next pay-per-view after Ryback was beaten and they ended his undefeated streak, the very next pay-per-view where he was in a headline match for the title, 212,000 buys. Last year, the show did 281,000 buys. And granted, last year they did have The Rock wrestling in the main event. But if you recall, it was Rock and John Cena against Miz and R-Truth. They did a hideous job building that matchup. But it still did 281,000 buys. But if you take The Rock out of the equation, the show the year prior did 244,000 buys. So even taking Rock out of the equation, this show did significantly worse than the last two shows, with Ryback fighting for the title in the main event. What does that mean? We'll talk about that more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts and the Survivor Series buy rate. 212,000 buys. The first show after they beat Ryback, Ryback headlining the show. Show doing a, quite frankly, horrible number. Last year's show, 281,000. That was with The Rock headlining. If you take Rock out of the picture and go back 2 years, 244,000. So, seriously, that's a bad number. And granted, it was going on the same weekend, not really head-to-head, but often when it's on the same weekend, when a WWE show is on the same weekend as a George St. Pierre fight, it's going to be hurt. So that you can probably add into the equation as well. But still, a really bad number. It probably speaks to the idea that, in fact, you probably should not have beaten Ryback. Probably should have never been in the Hell in a Cell match at all. It did help them in the short term, but looks like in the long term, probably didn't pay off for them. And I guess we'll see where we go going forward now that it's been three big losses in a row, and will be four, most likely, when him and Punk actually do the TLC match in July.
You know, I disagree with that a little bit, just because didn't Money in the Bank do a little bit better number that they had thought? And, you know, again, it shines more of a light on how poorly they did last year when you're talking about 280,000 and it slipped down. I don't think it's that alarm ringing that they should actually probably be happy with that number, considering the amount of programming they have on. The fact that it is, you know, you're getting towards the holiday season where people, you know, if they got Money in the Bank or they're looking forward to getting, what came after that, Night of Champions or the Survivor Series, after that, they may have picked and choose, you know, they may be picking and choosing a little bit. And again, you know, the George St. Pierre fight, and that's $70 or whatever it is if you get it in HD, and you had the Pacquiao Marquez fight coming up. And I'm not really making excuses for them. I just don't think that it's that big of a deal, and they should probably be, you know, with all things considered, be happy with 215,000 buys. I know that's really, you know.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, I know it's, you know, aiming low, that way you're never disappointed, but I mean, it's not a good number, and it should have been a lot better. But when you put it on the sliding scale of last year, and you go, The Rock was only worth 65,000 more buys, I think it's just the whole thing, you know, WWE's done a great job. You know, it used to be the sum of your parts were more important than the whole back at one time in professional wrestling, and WWE has done a great job, you know, in one way with the machine. But the problem is, you know, sometimes guys are not going to make that big of a difference. And again, I to be honest, I'm surprised they even got 250,000 buys under the circumstances with the amount of programming they have on and how all over the place it is when you can't be invested in most of these people. Or, you know, honestly, I mean, outside of a handful of guys, who's really emotionally invested into much of that roster?
The Survivor Series 2010, let's look at this. This is why this number to me was hideous. Yes, last year it did 281. You had The Rock returning to the ring after 7 years. So I'll actually just throw that one completely. I'll throw that number completely out. So as a comparison, we're looking at the 2010 and the 2009 Survivor Series. 2009 did 235,000 buys. And that was a show, if I recall correctly, that had John Cena, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, which, if you remember, they built that one up with comedy, and it was an absolutely horrendous build. And I remember the number being so bad that, in fact, that also went head-to-head, if I recall correctly, with a George St. Pierre fight. So that number that the show did in 2009 was considered awful, that 235,000. And the year after that, which was Randy Orton and Wade Barrett was your main event, in the gimmick match where Cena was a special referee, and if Barrett won, Cena was free, and if Orton won, Cena was fired, and Cena was fired for 24 hours, if I recall correctly. That show did 244,000. So we're looking at a drop from 235, 244, all the way down to 212. That's a huge drop from the average, and that's throwing out the Rock number. If you throw out the Rock number, it's even more, you know, the Rock number I can consider an aberration, but if the prior year shows had done like 210, that'd be one thing, but they did significantly higher at a period where 235 was considered awful, and now they're down to 212. So, a lot of reasons. I'm sure GSP is one of them, but I also do think a part of it is, I mean, if you look at why Hell in a Cell did a good number, I honest to God think it was because people were expecting Ryback to win the title. And as soon as he got beat, headlined the next show, and it meant less than nothing.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I really can't. I just don't think you can put as much. And again, I'm not saying that it helped at all by any means. In fact, it did hurt. But with that said, I don't think there's as many people that thought that went, well, okay, I'm disappointed the Ryback didn't win, and you know now I'm not going to order the next show. I just don't think that you can put it as heavy as you're putting on that. Although, again, I can't argue with the number. And realistically, you know, we'll just have to see what the ones coming out after this are. And that'll give, you know, a far better indication.
I would say that it's more than Ryback, because if you look at the 2009 and 2010 shows, 235 and 244, I think that without The Rock, this year's show should have done 235, 244, somewhere in that range. I don't think that Ryback losing made the Survivor Series base drop. I think the Survivor Series base drop was due in large part to GSP. You know, it was his first fight back in 19 months or whatever the number was. And he is by far UFC's biggest pay-per-view draw. And if that show ends up doing 750,000 buys, I mean, it's hardly inconceivable that they stole 30,000 of those buys from Survivor Series. I think it's very possible.
And, you know, I'm not saying that there's a heavy correlation between the fan bases, although there is some. But, you know, one thing that people forget about is there's lots of people who, you know, the fathers and mothers, but especially the fathers, watch the UFC. The kids watch WWE. And so, you know, obviously the parents sometimes like them both, but if it comes down to ordering that pay-per-view, they may not get the next one the next day for the kid because they have, again, they've already spent $70 or $60 to buy the George St. Pierre fight. So, again, I'm not saying it's the only factor or anything like that, but people forget that's one of the factors because we're in the age group of people who have kids and they grew up as wrestling fans, and we like ordering wrestling sometimes for our kids or to watch it for ourselves. But, you know, we're 30, 35 years old, and then we have kids that, you know, want to order the WWE pay-per-view who are far more into it usually than their parents are. That, again, they don't get a chance, and you do always have the excuse there's a million other shows on, and or we'll go ahead and get the next one.
And really, if you look at that Survivor Series pay-per-view, I mean, if you are somebody who you had to make a choice, the return of GSP or an average Survivor Series show that, honest to God, would have done much worse probably with a 10-man Survivor Series elimination match headlining. I mean, it was John Cena, CM Punk, who have wrestled 8 million times, and you throw in Ryback, who they told you the month prior, we ain't protecting this guy all that much. He can still lose. So it was not an impressive card. And a non-impressive card going against the return of UFC's biggest draw is going to be hurt.
Yeah, and again, so many of these matches you see you've seen for free on TV. Why would you order them? I mean, Antonio Cesaro and R-Truth, to the outsider, they go, why am I paying to watch these guys three times? And really, it was a way to help Antonio Cesaro get over a little bit more, you know, get more comfortable with WWE. You know, the whole nine yards, there's reasons that they did it, but in another era, we would be watching, you know, you'd have to go to a house show to see them wrestle. They would have conflict on TV that led to the pay-per-view, you know, match between the two. Instead, we've had a series of three matches where they've wrestled on pay-per-view, and Cesaro's won all three, and they've been, you know, good matches. I'm not going to complain about that, you know, good filler. But, again, where's the emotional investment into wanting to separate someone, you know, from their money for that? In 2010, at least they were riding the Nexus thing, and I think that led to the Juan Cena debut that I saw in Salisbury that year around Christmas time. And since we're at Christmas time again, I'll say one more time, they really blew a good marketing opportunity with that as far as selling masks go. But
I was going to say, you're one of the only people that got to see that.
Yes. West Newberry, Mexico, I believe it was. But, you know, again, there were, and again, I'm not making an excuse for the show or anything like that, but I think with all things considered, when you look at what the business is now and you look at all aspects of even the casual fan, it's hard to care, and playoff football and the whole nine yards of everything, I don't think that number is completely all that awful. It's not good. It's not great. But in a way, they should probably be happy that they got it.
Well, we'll agree to disagree on that one. I'd be upset if I were Vince McMahon seeing that number.
They should be upset, no doubt about that. But they should also be pointing the finger at themselves.
Well, yeah, there's too much stuff on television. All right, we got a minute left in this segment. So very quickly, put on your booking hat. Whatever you think of Ryback and his loss, he has lost on three big shows in a row, and now he has to face CM Punk in a TLC match on July 7th on Raw, and I'd say there's a 99% chance he has to lose that match. How do you beat him this time?
He absolutely has to do it. He's got to, again, there's going to be plunder or interference involved, something like that. He loses that match, but immediately afterwards, you have to have him killing people, maybe do it in the Elimination Chamber, something like that, leading into a big WrestleMania win for him if you want him to keep steaming.
All right, we're going to head to a break, everybody. When we come back, we are going to talk the return of Ric Flair to WWE. At least they claim for one night only. That's coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Also available, Sirius XM Channel 794. So either 94 or 794, as well as the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Just check out the TuneIn Radio app. Search for Sports Byline USA. You can listen to Wrestling Observer live every Sunday afternoon. And there are archives on there as well, as well as archives up at WrestlingObserver.com, our website. WrestlingObserver.com, the place to go. All the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts from around the world. Daily news updates, daily radio shows. So many radio shows, it's ridiculous. Sometimes as many as 15 radio shows in a single week. Plus, if you sign up for $10.99 a month, your subscription gives you access to every show we have ever done, dating back to 2005. And if you sign up today, you will have access to the 2012 Brian and Vinny Christmas show, which will be coming to you on Christmas. It's quite the show. Vinny and I sit around, we drink a lot of liquor, call some friends, open some presents, have a good time. One of the more popular shows every year. And if you want to see some of the aftermath of this show, which was produced last night, in fact, you can head over to my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez. I got a bunch of pictures up from the Christmas show festivities. It'll be a teaser for you before the actual show appears on the website on Christmas. So that's worth your $12.95 right there. Please. I nearly killed myself for that $12.95. Let's get back to the program here. We're talking the Slammy Award winning edition of Raw, or something like that. Ric Flair return. It is a, for the moment, one-time-only appearance. There is still a WWE TNA contract tampering lawsuit that is, I mean, it's still alive, maybe on life support, but it's still alive. As a result, there's a decree by WWE that they will not be hiring anybody from TNA. They really wanted Ric Flair on this show. So they, instead of hiring him, instead of signing him, which they basically, in order, there was a restraining order on WWE regarding TNA talent. And WWE got the court to drop the restraining order by stating that we have no interest in anybody from TNA. So there's nothing preventing WWE from hiring anybody from TNA, except they essentially gave their word that they had no interest in anybody. So if they signed somebody, they're going back on their word. So that obviously would play off poorly in the court of not just public opinion, but the court of legal opinion. So instead of hiring Ric Flair to a contracted agreement, they brought him in for one night only for this show, and presumably he may make some other one night only appearances until whatever is going on with the lawsuit ends up getting settled or dropped. So Ric Flair was there. He was all over the show. Nearly a million people tuned in to see Ric Flair on that program, so still a huge draw. Very entertaining in his role, say what you will about his public life. Very entertaining as a performer. And Mike, what did you make of the whole situation?
Well, first, with Raw, this week when they would introduce something and then go to commercial, I just thought about it, and I didn't read any live reports. But boy, even though I'm sure the boogeyman did his thing in that time and everything else, that has to make it just a painfully long show when you have the lead up of we're going to announce it and then they go to break and then they come back. It just, man, that's got to be tough for the live crowd. Two, it's kind of funny we talk about wrestlers not being able to work at different places because one of the, I know this, everybody knows the deal, but it's kind of funny when you think about, aren't wrestlers independent contractors and should be able to do this sort of stuff? It is kind of funny there when they talk about that, you know, and obviously we're in a different era now, but still amusing when you think about independent contractors not being able to work for where they want. But three, I was happy to see Ric Flair back, obviously, and his interaction with CM Punk and Paul Heyman was great. But with that said, he did too much. He really did do too much. If they are going to bring him back, now if they're not going to do it for a significant period of time, I understand why. you want to get all of Flair in as much as humanly possible. But if you have any designs to bring him back even next month or the month after, I really think you made a mistake having him do so much, you know, on Monday night. And it is kind of funny they had that much physicality when, again, they have looming in the back of their mind. And even Ric Flair knows this. He's been flat out told this, that they would rather have him not doing much, you know, definitely no matches and not much physical stuff. But then again, it is when you sign on to Ric Flair, you're going to get Ric Flair.
Now, obviously, they spent a lot of the show building up a potential encounter. I mean, I guess him and CM Punk had an encounter, but they certainly were teasing a fight. And they're not going to let Ric Flair have an official match, because if you recall, he is retired, supposedly, forever, even though he wrestled for 2 years in TNA.
But he must have lost a little bit, too, because I noticed Paul Heyman was not limping on SmackDown, so maybe that figure four of Ric Flair's lost a little bit of luster.
That's right. That's right. They did have him undergo an EKG. They checked his heart before they had him do this physical angle on Raw. They're obviously open him doing some sort of physical deal with CM Punk. I don't know what that would be. I don't know if like a street fight would count as not a match since he's retired. I don't know what they're going to do, but obviously they seem like they're leading to something. And given that Ryback is challenging for the title on the 7th, that would also indicate that CM Punk is retaining, unless they decide to just totally throw all plans out the window, put the title on Ryback, do Ryback versus Rock at the Royal Rumble, have Ric Flair screw CM Punk out of the title, and then do something with Punk and Flair. I do not at all expect that to happen, but it is obviously, they could do whatever they want. I don't think it's going to happen. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Flair, because they look like they're setting up for something, but he's not even under contract, and he's not supposed to wrestle. So that's interesting.
Well, you know, if everything works itself out, and I know this would be, again, you'd have to have a lot of steps to get to this point, but would you pay to see, you know, Flair and CM Punk at WrestleMania? And, you know, I will say this, no matter what, if you're going to put Ric Flair in the hands of somebody, you know, CM Punk is one of those guys that you know would be good. This is why I don't think they would do Rock and Ryback at Royal Rumble, because even though The Rock can get a lot out of a guy and they could do very little and probably make it work, I think it would just be too much of a stretch, and I just don't think it would be the right thing to do to make that happen. But, you know, again, if you're going to do Rock Cena at WrestleMania, and you're gonna, you know, and you have all these things, and you could do Punk Undertaker, although I don't think that would be the one I would do. You could do Punk and Flair as one of those things on a stacked show in an area that would obviously eat it up. So you could go that direction as well, and it would be the probably, you know, not necessarily the show stealer of the night, because Ric Flair can't do what he used to do, but it would be, you know, a hell of a feather in the cap of a WrestleMania. So, again, there's a lot of things you can do. I don't really necessarily want to see Ric Flair wrestle, but, you know, hopefully they can work something out, because his presence there, again, to help out a Dolph Ziggler, to do anything could be, you know, it's a very welcome addition, especially when the shows are going to be so damn long.
WWE did have 11 hours of first-run programming in 4 days, and I don't even know how to explain how it went. The Raw number was better, but it was also going head-to-head with a nothing football game, and it had the return of Ric Flair, but it still did better, so that's a positive. SmackDown did a lot better, but it was a commercial-free edition of SmackDown, so that's kind of cheating in the sense that the WWE audience takes advantage of commercial breaks, and they turn the channel. This is not an audience that sits through the breaks till the show comes back. When the breaks come on, they leave. Sometimes they don't come back for a while. But commercial-free SmackDown, no break, so people watch continuously. 3.3 million viewers. It's a great number for a Tuesday SmackDown, but again, you got to take into consideration the fact that that they kind of cheated with no breaks. But still, a better number. So that's two positives. Tribute to the Troops didn't do all that well on Wednesday night. That was, if you talk Sunday 3 hours, Monday 3 hours, Tuesday 2 hours nonstop, and then, Wednesday another two. Not surprising that people were getting burned out by that point. I won't lie. I couldn't even make it through all the tribute to the troops. It's still on my DVR. Had a lot of stuff to finish up in terms of work on Wednesday night. But I did watch the opening match with Randy Orton getting injured. And I don't know. Randy Orton, he's got two strikes on the wellness policy. So you got to be careful with him. Because what happens if he gets a third? He'd have to be... Technically, he'd be terminated based on the letter of the law. He could be brought back after a year, but a third strike is basically a one-year suspension, is the best way to put it. He also has several concussions during his career. That's not good. And now he was in a match on Tribute to the Troops. He threw a punch, and his shoulder dislocated. He didn't take a weird bump. He didn't fall out of the ring. He threw a punch, and his shoulder dislocated. And they ended up being able to pop it back in, and he was able to hit the RKO finish, which I'm sure felt great. But he's out of action until the beginning of the year. So when you got a guy that his body is, I don't want to say it's falling apart, but man, when your shoulders are such that you pop them out of the socket, punching the mat or throwing a worked punch at somebody, and then you add the wellness strikes against him, and then you add the concussions, I don't know how much longer this guy can go. And that may be one of the reasons why he's not being pushed as a main event act. And there is talk of Orton versus Sheamus for the title at Mania, which would mean either Sheamus or Orton would have to win the title. But I don't know. Is this his last hurrah? Probably, you know, maybe that's a little extreme, but it's tough when you're WWE and you've got this situation.
Yeah, you know, they're lucky because they have Barrett. And Barrett, I think, can slip into the, if you want him to be a cool heel, he could. I mean, again, he's going to take some time, and obviously he'll need to be treated carefully to do this, but at least you have that going for you. And Randy Orton, it's really not the dislocated shoulders now, because he's had them before, and I think anybody that's had a dislocated shoulder knows, you know, it's going to, you're really... The possibilities of it happening again are high, but you can work through it. I mean, that's going to be something I think that's going to bother him more later on in life. It's not going to be as bad, you know, right now for his career. The collarbone's a little bit more of a concern because that's one of those injuries. It's like tearing the Achilles tendon that people seem to say that, you know, once you've done that, there's always going to be, you're always thinking about it. It's always going to be an issue. It's one of the things with Ken Kennedy a couple of years ago. That sent Orton into, you know, hysterics and probably should have. Who knows, though? So, it's those injuries like that that I don't think are going to hurt him as much now, that the shoulder at least, as it will later on. But, the wellness policy thing and the fact that he's had concussions, you know, that's really more of a concern than anything. So, I would say you really got to treat Wade Barrett carefully because I think he is, you know, again, he's the best guy you could have to try to match up with Orton as far as going forward if Orton really cannot continue to stay uninjured or to have issues.
So it's obviously a very big week for WWE programming, and they've already taped Raw and SmackDown. So it's going to be, in fact, it is right now a very quiet period for WWE. People are at home, and they're going to remain at home until the post-Christmas house show run, which is one of the more lucrative, in fact, one of the most lucrative, perhaps the most lucrative house show run of the year, since a lot of kids for Christmas, they get WWE tickets. So everyone's going to be on the tour with the exception of CM Punk. He'll be there, but he won't be wrestling as a result of his injury. So a lot of house shows coming up, but no big shows really until the July 7th Raw, and then obviously the Royal Rumble. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline USA. Listen to the show live every Sunday. Mike, before we wrap it up today, tell us about the life, times, and the passing of Rip Hawk.
Yeah, Rip Hawk passed away. I believe he was 82 years old, had a heart condition, but a lot of today's fans may not know who he is, but he was kind of a big influence on a lot of what we see today. He debuted all the way back in 1949, so way back in the day. But he's best known for his tag team that he had initially with Swede Hansen in the Mid-Atlantic area at a time where the Mid-Atlantic was driven by tag teams. The Assassins and Johnny Weaver, George Becker, and Bogney, and Bronco Lubitsch, and they had a ton of them there. And he was a massive star there, facing guys like Johnny Weaver and George Becker. And that tag team was a big one for a long time. And then after George Scott came in and took over the booking there and tried to turn it from a tag team era to a singles area with guys like Wahoo McDaniel and Johnny Valentine, and Hansen had a heart attack, Hulk hooked up with Ric Flair, who was coming over from the AWA territory, and they wanted to get him some more shine and start him off on his young career. And Hulk used to be known as the Profile with the blonde hair, and he'd pose to the side and have a little bit of ego to his deal. And he took Ric Flair under his wing. They announced him initially as a nephew of Rip Hawk, and later on that turned into him being a cousin of the Andersons. But it started off with his career, and he won the NWA, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was called the Eastern States, I think it was the Mid-Atlantic tag team titles, and that ended up being Flair's first championship run. And he started working from there, so I'm sure Dave Meltzer is going to have a great biography on Rip Hawk, but a very interesting character with a lot of stories that actually impact today's wrestling.
We are out of time. Thank you, Mike. Thanks, everybody at Sports Byline. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great holiday, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.